Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Lieutenant General Douglas Robb, Director of the Defense Health Agency. You know, sir, when I was preparing for this interview, I came across a line from Dr. Woodson, which said that if war is the dark side of human experience, military medicine is the hope and the light. And what I want to talk about is some of the medical innovations that you folks have championed over the last 12 years. What has happened? Where are these innovations? And how have they translated into the civilian world?
When you look at the advances in military medicine, again, that come out of, like you said, the dark side, which is conflict and wars, the incredible advances, that have moved medicine forward are driven by, again, the dedication, by our healthcare professionals, whether it's, leave no soldier, sailor, airman behind, as I tell folks, you've got to do everything you can, to ensure that those soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, get home to their families. And then if they don't, you may dang sure that you did everything you could. This conflict in particular has really driven particularly combat casualty care and trauma care delivery to a level that's never been seen anywhere, to include our nation back home. There was a group of folks, again, that were very, very innovative strategic thinkers. This is one example that were that nucleus of folks that was down at San Antonio Military Medical Center, down at Wolford Hall and Brooke Army Med Center, that proposed what we call the joint trauma system. This was back in 2005. And what they did was they took the stovepiped entities out there. One was pre-hospital care, hospital care, and in-route care, and brought all those guys together to build a continuum of care that has never before been seen to date. And so there were several things that came out of that. One was in the pre-hospital care, what we call tactical combat casualty care, the recognition, again, each war has its significant injuries. And this one was, the IED. And so we were seeing folks that were getting these pretty serious, blast injuries, but which can go both ways. One, you're going to get traumatic brain injury, but you're also going to get trauma, which in the form of amputations. And what they saw was, you can secure the airway and get them to breathe, but if they bleed out, so that rapid recognition that something as simple as a tourniquet will save a soldier, sailor, airman, and Marine's life, and that rapid application. And so what we saw was, it's not just the medic carrying the tourniquet, it was every soldier, sailor, and airman carrying. So in fact, a lot of these tourniquets, and there are stories out there where folks put their own tourniquet on. Absolutely. Something as simple as that. And then what we saw was this whole, what I call, development of damage control surgery and damage control resuscitation by our trauma community. And we kind of went into the war 10 years ago where we used a lot of saline solutions. And now we've come out of this war. It's what's the right mix of blood products. So we completely turned what we call the resuscitation paradigm upside down. And that has been exciting into itself. Now you've got folks, because we've pushed damage control surgery and damage control surgery and resuscitation so far forward, again, on a tent, in a remote forward operating base, you've got these young men and women coming out of there. These are what we call ICU level patients. Mm-hmm. These are patients coming out of a tent on a ventilator with lines and tubes everywhere. And so now you've got to move that patient. You're moving an ICU, not just down the hall from the OR to the intensive care unit. You're moving them, in a helicopter from a forward operating location to a theater hospital. And then now you've got to move them 6,000-8,000 miles, back to Germany and back to the United States. So the Air Force was able to create these flying ICUs. So you're taking care of patients, again, that folks say they would be challenged to take care of in a hospital at 35,000 feet, and you're it. And you're it. I once had a comment from one of my colleagues, civilian colleagues in the UK, that said, you guys move these critical care patients, you know, 7,000 miles, and I'd be scared to move them across town in an ambulance. So that's been exciting, and to watch that community come together, that's just one set. And oh, by the way, pushing blood products far forward. And so I recently had an experience where I'm riding up a chairlift with an EMT from Denver, and I was asking him, you know, hey, any of these new advances? He goes, as a matter of fact, on my desk is a training manual on how to use tourniquets and how to apply blood products, again, in that EMT environment. And so we're changing the face of medicine as we speak. And again, it's been exciting. Our guard and reserve colleagues who are, again, are skilled leaders, at, you know, at the Houstons, again, the Baltimores, the St. Louis, these folks that wear the uniform part-time but are going back, you know, and they're advancing healthcare and changing their trauma response systems, again, as we speak. And then we could go down the whole line of prosthetics, you know. When you think about these young men and women, you know, they're incredible physical specimens, and then and we saw it at the beginning of this war, and that was the beauty, again, the folks that are scanning the horizon for opportunity. A lot of those folks were at Walter Reed, at Bethesda, and then and down in San Antonio, and then out at Balboa in San Diego. But, you know, it was when there was an emerging technology for these new prosthetic devices, and they were able to match that because that had not caught on across the nation yet. And they were able to match that up with, again, these returning service members, again, and we've got 40, 45 below the knee amputee folks with prosthetics that have returned to combat, wow. Have returned to combat. Prior to this conflict, they would have been boarded out. So, you know, I could just go on and on, you know, about that. You know, we've had arm transplants. We talked about the, you know, our alliances with the civilian sector. But, you know, we had one of our young soldiers that actually had an arm transplant, you know. You know, the artificial skin stuff that we're doing with, again, many of our research colleagues out there. The understanding and the recognition of PTSD and traumatic brain injury, you know, folks would say, you know, are we doing enough? You know, the civilian sector, you know, we are taking the best practices out there, but they didn't understand it well either, you know. And so I think what you're going to see is much like you've seen help transform the trauma care. You're going to see that, I think, as we coalesce and bring, you know, we're able to bring those folks together to bring the best and the brightest and look at what are the clinical practice guidelines and the algorithms, again, that are clinically driven, you know, that have data outcomes that support. And so bringing those communities together, you know, because we're not where we want to be, but we're a whole lot better than we were even 5 years ago. And so I'm excited about the opportunity there.
Well, General, I would like to get your advice. What advice would you give someone who is thinking about a career in medicine, military service, or just public service in general?
Well, let's talk about the military first. You know, folks ask me, you know, why I stay in. And at the end of the day, it's because I can't think of any population that I would be prouder to take care of. You know, the men and women and their families and our vets are a special population. And it's a privilege and it's an honor to take care of these men and women. You know, we ask a lot of them, and many of these folks have given a lot, you know, and it's the least that I can do, you know, to ensure, again, from, let's say, my perspective today, you know, to ensure that we have a medically ready force and then a ready medical force to ensure that these folks can perform the best to their ability so that they can come home to their husbands, wives, sons and daughters, mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, you know, and again, not only with what I call alive, but also with a quality of life that they so richly deserve. And I think that's true, you know, no matter what branch, whether you're, you know, in the public health service, you know, health and human services, you know, we all work towards, you know, we all go into medicine with the healthcare-related fields, you know, because we want to make a difference. Sure. Everybody has their reasons for choosing whatever branch of healthcare that they want to go into. But the military population, their families, and our veterans is a population that I tell you what, I am privileged and honored to take care of each and every day.
Well, it was a privilege and an honor to have you in with me today. It was a great conversation. I want to thank you for your time, but more importantly, I'd like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Thank you.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Lieutenant General Douglas Robb, Director of the Defense Health Agency. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.